words from Stephanie Germanotta. I live halfway between reality and theater at all times. I was born that way. I'm beautiful in my way because God makes no mistakes. I'm on the right track, baby. I was born this way. My fashion is part of who I am. Though I was not born with these clothes on, I was born this way. A record deal doesn't make you an artist. You make yourself an artist. If you say something that doesn't truly come from your spirit and soul, or if you wear something that doesn't come from your spirit and soul, it's an injustice to you. I'm really myself every day. I am constantly creating. I live and breathe my work. I believe in the message. And to anyone who says this is wrong to feel like this, say to them, I was born this way, baby. And at the end of the day, you won't be happy until you love yourself. Let's turn the clock back to the year 30 CE. A king staged a triumphal entry into Jerusalem during the Jewish feast of Passover. The king was Herod Antipas, the Roman ruler of Galilee and Perea. Antipas had just disposed of a pesky guy named John the Baptist, and now was the time for Herod to show his power, not just out in the boondocks of Galilee, but among thousands of pilgrims in Jerusalem for Passover. Herod had good reason to flaunt his image. He was a generous patron of the temple. His ceremonial entry into the holy city during Passover, it would have been orchestrated in regal style, worthy of a Cecil B. DeMille production, with hundreds of horses, war chariots, banners, foot soldiers, and all along the parade route, loud and staged acclamations by the Jewish populace who were suffering under Roman rule in the occupied territory. From peasants to priests, many had based their livelihoods on the temple's vast bureaucracy. Herod Antipas, ruler of Galilee during the first century, a bully on steroids, pretending to be king. 3 years later, a rabbi named Yeshua also journeyed from Galilee to Jerusalem, also during Passover. But Yeshua's entry into Jerusalem, if we can believe the legends, was anything but a triumph. The legends say he rode a donkey and wore tattered clothing. If the followers of Yeshua were shouting praises to their donkey-riding king, and if they covered his pathway with the same palm fronds which Herod Antipas had inscribed on all of the coins to honor Herod, then the legend of Yeshua's little parade on Palm Sunday, it may well be a purposeful satire mocking Herod's arrogance and false triumphalism. Incidentally, I can find no credible reports comparing the size of the crowds of those two parades. And into this matrix of power, the rabbi Yeshua brought a radical message, one that cost him his life. He confronted directly the long-established purity regulations of the ancient Near East. And that timeless question, am I good enough? His response challenged all of those in power, Jewish and Roman alike. And they disposed of him. So today we consider the question, am I good enough? Through two lenses, one from ancient Palestine, where a rabbi initiated a reform movement within Judaism, and second, a contemporary prophet who speaks to those labeled little monsters and not good enough. Lady Gaga, who devotes her life and music to reclaiming human worth and dignity. First, let's look at ancient Palestine. What was going on? For centuries, a single overarching ethic was the bread and butter of the ancient Near East and the Jewish tradition, namely holiness, being perfect. And perfection meant separation from anything that's impure. This ethic intensified through the Maccabean period into New Testament times, and it became the dominant pacemaker of Israel's corporate life. The text for purity was the priestly code of Leviticus. You shall be holy because I, Yahweh, your God, am holy. And holiness meant separation. In fact, the Hebrew words for separation, parush, and holiness, kadosh, were synonyms. To be holy, separate yourself from everybody else, from the impure. In the year 63, the Roman army seized Jerusalem and desecrated the temple. The Jewish people now had to confront a calamity by asking, what now must we do to remain loyal to God? The answer, be holy. But what did that mean with the temple destroyed? The answers were reform movements within Judaism. Two in particular left a long impact on history: the Essenes and the Pharisees. The Essenes' quest for purity led to their total separation. They withdrew to the wilderness along the Dead Sea at Qumran, living in a highly disciplined monastic community. They intensified the commands of the Torah. Punishment for any infraction was exile. Their literature, which we now have in the Dead Sea Scrolls, includes predictions of a cosmic battle between the children of light and the children of darkness. Not only were the Romans the enemy, other Jews had also sold out. And so the only option for the Essenes was total isolation in the wilderness and preparing to do battle against evil. Then there were the Pharisees. Their fixation on perfection centered not upon escaping from society, but by drawing very sharp lines of separation within society. The Pharisees were the hair splitters, the legalists, the literalists, the snoops and informers. And they made it their business to keep sharp eyes out for and report any Jews who seemed to be crossing those purity boundaries. So into this matrix of perfection came the Galilean peasant, Yeshua. And he considered holiness from a radically different perspective. For him, the fullness of life emerges not through separation and not through legal hair splitting. For Yeshua, holiness centers on table fellowship. Holiness means sitting down to share a meal with people who may be radically different, even your enemies. People who may be scorned as little monsters and not good enough. Yeshua said to householders, throw open your doors and welcome to your table not only those whom you may approve of, but those who have been scorned as unclean. Be compassionate even toward the most despised and nobodies. So Yeshua threw protocol out the window. He spoke of a kingdom not for deserving and proper folks, but for the poor, the destitute. And moreover, this kingdom was not going to happen sometime later on when it gets better. This is it. This is the time right now. It was a principle grounded not in political power, but in religious and economic egalitarianism. This shared table fellowship challenged not only Judaism's strict purity regulations, but civilization's repeated inclinations to keep drawing lines. And so he invited a political revolution and a social revolution. A revolution at dangerous levels. Such chutzpah was just as threatening to the line drawers and bullies of first century Palestine as it is today. Let's fast forward to the present, to Stephanie Germanotta, Lady Gaga. She was an awkward teenager. Her peers bullied her for having a big nose and thick eyebrows. They teased her for her laugh, for her love of theater, for her penchant for constantly singing, for the way she wore makeup. They made fun of her tan, her hairdos. They called her a slut. She wasn't good enough. Now Stephanie is world famous. She has the most renowned wardrobe on the planet, perhaps. And legions of fans, who she calls her little monsters, fans who cheer her multiple Grammy Awards. Her shows are filled with memorable theatrics, brassieres that shoot sparks, dresses made of meat, intricately choreographed dances, fake blood, real fire. One year at the Grammys, she was carried on stage and emerged from a giant egg. Not quite like the Rabbi Yeshua, I don't think. So how can I mention both of these the same week? Not quite the same theatrics. But despite her success, she hasn't forgotten being bullied as a teenager, being a misfit, and being scorned. Her message to her fans is that it's all right to be labeled little monsters. Others may regard them as too fat, too skinny, or harass them because they are just different. But as their mother monster, she affirms that they have dignity. In her concerts, she reminds them that she was and still is a misfit. But she shares her fame and herself. In return, her fans not only adore her, but they reclaim respect for themselves. A 15-year-old boy wrote to her, "I am an extremely devoted little monster, and I will be a little monster all my life. At every concert, you have said that you want to liberate us, and that is what you have done. Your songs have taught me not to listen to haters and instead to be who I am, because, baby, I was born this way." End of quote. And if that isn't a message for our times, I don't know what is. And so we're entering a week of Passover in the Jewish tradition, Holy Week in the Christian tradition. And you know, I find a common element in the traditions of Passover and the myths of Palm Sunday. Because both of these stories, against a backdrop of slavery in Egypt and a backdrop of occupation in Palestine, both of these are caricatures about false triumphalism and abusive forms of power. They remind us that all the pomp and circumstances and high honors in this world may be as fleeting as the wind. If you remember the Palm Sunday legend, you remember that Yeshua enters Jerusalem in a public demonstration on a holiday without a permit. He borrows a donkey. Bad protocol. But Odysseys tend to be like that, with little regard for protocol. And whom did he choose to accompany him? Was it the best and the brightest? Didn't do that. His friends were the outcast, the poor, the little monsters, those who were scorned as not good enough. And so why did he choose them when he could have chosen among his 12 disciples? I just love that cartoon, which shows Jesus holding a cell phone. It says, 12 followers so far, sweet. Why did he not choose those who could be to his advantage and get him connected? Perhaps it was because those he chose had fewer pretensions and were more willing to recognize and to share in each other's foolishness. Perhaps he turned to them because those who need forgiveness can perhaps forgive a little more easily. And so I wonder, is it too much to suggest that Lady Gaga, in her mission, is ministering to them even amidst the flamboyant theatrics? Is it a stretch to say that her message is the same as that of the first century rabbi? We are all misfits, and we are all loved anyway. For me, the frond of flappers and the Palm Sunday legend and the arm-waving little monsters and the mosh pits at Lady Gaga concerts, they have something in common. They remind us that being good enough is not about self-serving forms of power. For the power which transforms through the strength of love may not appear in a charismatic messiah or in a triumphal parade of a fake king from Galilee or a political movement. For me, the Palm Sunday legend and the message of Lady Gaga and her Born This Way Foundation, look it up. These are about going out from the churches and synagogues, going out into the streets alongside those who are scorned as nobodies. It's about hearing and bearing the message of worth and dignity. And so, you know, I need to reclaim the Palm Sunday legend just as I value the Lady Gagas of today. It's a message strengthened by the bonds of religious community, which extends to the hills and valleys and distant byways, and to wherever those who've been told that they are not good enough, wherever they are awaiting liberation.